Hi, this is Mark Newbold from Fanta Tracks, and you're listening to the Rebel Base Card Podcast. Great pull, kid.
Everything's under control, situation normal, but everything's perfectly all right now. We're fine. We're all fine here now. Thank you. How are you?
Everything's going to be all right, kid.
You found the Rebel Base Card Podcast.
She may not look like much, but she's got it where it counts, kid.
I'm your host, Greg McLaughlin.
Have I made a few bad decisions? Sure.
We talk about cards, collecting Star Wars, and to people in the Star Wars community.
Don't worry, we're going to meet up with some friends of mine.
Look for special episodes called The Breakfast Pack, talking about your favorite Star Wars shows.
We will never have a better chance than this.
All right, let's get started.
Well, perhaps it is time to begin again.
Welcome back, or if this is your first episode, welcome aboard. My name is Greg McLaughlin, and this is the Rebel Base Card Podcast. Great show for you tonight, as my guest is Mark Newbold from Fanta Tracks. Longtime listeners know he has been a staple at least once a year, and this is his fifth time on the show, and he's bringing the goods, folks. Mark had a lot to talk about, including his recent trip to FINSA to help celebrate the 45th anniversary of the shooting of some of the Hoth exterior shots from Empire Strikes Back. We're going to talk about the Phantom Menace at 25 and what's to come for Fanta Tracks, as well as a little bit on the Acolyte and Bad Batch. I'm going to get into some homestead keeping first, so keep it right there. We'll be right back.
This is Mark Molcaster from Fanta Tracks, and you are listening to the Rebel Base Card Podcast. She may not look like much, but she's got it where it counts.
Oh, just before I get into the homestead keeping, I just wanted to give a shout out and thanks to Daniel over at Star Wars Pod Day and at Star Wars Now This for reminding me this week that it was my fifth anniversary of the podcast. 5 years ago, March 12th, 2019, I did release a few of the shows that I'd been kind of putting together as a demo as I was kind of gearing up for Star Wars Celebration and C2E2. Kind of painful for me to listen to, but that is a marker. And I'm not big on anniversary shows. They're a lot of work. But I just wanted to say thank you again to Daniel for wishing me a happy anniversary. And geez, 5 years, and we're getting into year six. So I don't know whether I'm doing too much right, but it is fun. And for those of you who've been along since the beginning, oh God, I'm so sorry that you had to put up with me for 5 years. But once again, it's been a real treat to get a chance to talk with you show after show and kind of bring you, you know, cards collecting, community, plus some of the other breakfast pack stuff that I think we eventually kind of settled down on a name for. But what a fun ride it's been, and I hope to keep doing this with you for a while to come.
You can waste time with your friends when your chores are done. Now, come on, get to it.
All right, I want to get you right into the action here, but I just had a few things I wanted to go over. We still have a few days left to order the last two cards of the Living set, which debuted back in 2019 off of Topps.com. This is the portrait set that Chris Penix and then Chris and Carlos Caballero did portraits for, that they made cards and they released two per week, you know, right through the pandemic and all that. And they're going to end at card 500, which is a shame because they were gorgeous prints and they make for great cards. And, you know, there was a time when that was really the easiest new product you could get during times where it was very hard to find products in stores or online. And it was just one of those things where it's a shame that it has to come to an end at 500. Some great stuff up there. The last two, Willrow Hood and Imperial Snowtrooper from Empire Strikes Back, are the last two. Now, you can buy those individually, I think, for $7.99, or buy the set for $11.99. And because it sort of ends on that big even number, they will include a checklist card. So three cards for $11.99. Chris was one of the first guests that we had on the podcast back, I think, in episode 13, when the set first came out. Very, very lovely man. And Carlos is also an amazing artist. These were really great. Now, you can still find them on secondary markets as well, and I encourage you to kind of look, because I'll bet you one of your favorite characters is out there, and you could probably find those cards fairly easily. You know, they did have a limited print run each, but gorgeous cards in that sort of like that classic 1977 blue Starfield with the gorgeous heritage stock on it. So it's like a nice, thick, old style card. But anyway, these will be on sale at tops.com until March 19th, usually around mid-morning Central Time. And you can see, if you go into tops.com, you can see how much time is left and if you want to order the last set. Otherwise, you will have to go, like I will be, to the secondary markets for some of the ones you are missing. Although, 500 cards, that's a pretty big set. I don't have all of them. I may have a quarter. I collected a lot of them. And then, you know, once again, I kind of went to some of my favorite characters if it came up, but a lot of great characters in there. Hopefully Topps brings it back. I know that there have been some, you know, some things that Lucasfilm and Topps are trying to work out with artists and sketch cards and compensation and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's pretty clear that Star Wars fans and card collectors love original artwork, and I encourage everybody to find a happy medium and bring about more original art cards. In the Star Wars Card Trader app, you can see, I think they just actually did release some Digital Galaxy cards, and that's just always a pleasure to see. I know Chris Penix has actually done some as well. I know Robert Jimenez has done some work in there. Darren Pepe has done some work in there. I know I'm missing a lot of names, but it's one of those things where I really recommend checking out the app. I know it just released a new base set. There were some great purple variants, and then there's a lot of stuff going on in there. Tons of events. So they just celebrated an anniversary as well. So I think Star Wars Card Trader's been going on since 2015. And you can find me in the app at CornFedTech. I'm always down for a trade, always trying to give you an idea of what's going on. And I usually put the cool stuff found, or at least retweet some of the stuff that they do, not only in X or Twitter, but I also try to post on Threads and Blue Sky as well. Sometimes in Hive if I get there, and also Instagram. So just one of those things where you can still find a lot of great Star Wars cards out there, even though it's been fairly quiet, not a lot on the Cardboard Connections calendar. And so for as far as new product, I know we've got stuff coming out. You have to imagine that we're going to see another Galaxy set. We're going to see another flagship set. We're going to see some Chrome Masterwork. It doesn't surprise me that we will see some of this. What I'm concerned about is that we'll see it all grouped together towards the end of the year when everybody's trying to buy Christmas presents, right? But hopefully, I'm going to knock on my kitchen table here, that we're going to see new product being announced soon so we can start kind of getting things, getting our ducks in order and getting ready to save up to buy some new product. Speaking of buying cards, the Chicago Sports Spectacular was going on the weekend that I am recording this. That's March 15th through the 17th over at Donald E. Stevens Convention Center. Now, mostly it does sports and sports memorabilia and lots of sports cards and whatnot, but it's always fun to kind of go down the street. It's really about 20 minutes away. And, you know, running into my friends, Francis Marflack, Bennett Sullivan, who did have a table, like part of a table that was, he was selling some of his Star Wars and soccer cards. And I picked up some really nice autos. And, you know, he had like a kind of a box of just this and that. It was really fun. But also he had some really amazing, you know, like one-on-one cards and really high-end stuff. And sometimes, hey, that might not be in the budget, but it's always cool to look at. And also over there, catching up with my friend Sal Berry from Puck Junk Podcast. Sal always has a table over there, and he's selling and talking about hockey cards and whatnot. And so I recorded a little bit of audio with him, with Clemente, and as well as Bennett and Francis. And I'll be releasing that here in a couple of weeks. But also, it's just, once again, it's a great show. Picked up, as well as some of the Star Wars stuff, I picked up some commons from my 1956 Chase. Also ran into Augie over there. I know he has a lot of memorabilia that he likes to sell. It's a little different, and it was nice to kind of catch up with him as well. And of course, we are still doing the breakfast pack. So if you've been following the podcast, subscribing to the feed, I do recommend subscribing if you haven't had a chance to yet. We are up to episode 70, and Jen Sobchakchai and Greg Cass and I were breaking down Bad Batch episodes 6 and 7. It's a little different, kind of a recap show where we're kind of trading our questions, and so it's always kind of fun. Jen and Greg, a great combination there. Jen was our special guest this time, but Greg Cass and I have been doing a pretty good job. Bad Batch was the show that we first started doing the Breakfast Pack with, and it's still going strong, still fun, and looking forward to covering the rest of the Bad Batch as we get into Hello, the Acolyte, which is going to be right around the corner, as well as May the 4th. I can't believe it. The spring is just really getting into full force, and we're going to be here at Phantom Menace 25 before you know it. And also, just lastly, been picking up more and more Phantom Menace cards as we get ready for the 25th anniversary of Phantom Menace cards. Can't wait to put that show together for you. All right, let's get back into our interview with Mark Newbold. I hope you enjoy it, and I'll see you on the other side.
Hey, this is Carl LeClaire from the Wampa's Lair podcast, and you're listening to the Rebel Base Card Podcast. Great pull, kid.
We're in attack position now, sir.
Hold here.
We're not going to attack.
I have my orders from the Emperor himself. He has something special planned for him. We only need to keep him from escaping.
You know, it's funny, in listening to the last number of Making Tracks, you know, as we were just saying, you know, off mic, it's like, it shouldn't be busy, but you've been incredibly busy, as always, and it seems like what should have been a downtime has ramped up again. And recently, you know, I cut an episode where I talked to a lot of, you know, other creators, you know, as Bad Batch was kind of revving up. And, you know, it's kind of funny now, we sort of maybe live in between the shows, right? So there's always a big, you know, there's always this big engine that drives when there is a series or something. And then once it stops, I think everybody kind of has to find their footing. But I was just surprised in listening to the places you've been and the conventions and so forth that you never really stopped.
Yeah, it's, I mean, we're lucky in the UK. We always have been, in that a lot of the actors are here. So there's always a show somewhere where some guest or somebody will be appearing. So we're very fortunate in that regard. And that, because, you know, the UK is not huge in terms of size, it's not that difficult to get around. I mean, most of them do tend to be down in London, places like that, where you've got to travel a few hours, but it's nothing you can't do in a day, most places. But yeah, we've been, it's weird. Like we said, it's because you are in between nowadays TV shows. When you go back not that long, go back 8 or 9 years, and we were in between films, which always feels kind of cool. But now we're between TV shows. And on one hand, it's fantastic because we're getting brand new Star Wars content every week. On the other hand, I sometimes wish that they would put an episode out every other week, because I think we'd have more time to sort of chew it over, dive into it, dig into stuff. It does feel like it's flying past us at speed sometimes. You get 3 episodes of Bad Batch in a day, and you watch them in a day, and you review them, and a few other little elements, chat to people on socials, and then you're on to the next one. So Star Wars, in that sense, has become quicker and more disposable, which is a shame, because the quality in that, it's certainly in the Bad Batch, hasn't dipped one drop. I think the Bad Batch has been brilliant. But yeah, you're right, it is. It's very much in between these tentpole moments of seasons, not even episodes now, it's seasons. So it'll be fun when we're into the next live action thing, which I'm guessing is probably going to be Acolyte. I hope it is. So that will be so fresh and new. I think that will really, the people who want to like it, the people who want to get invested in it, like ourselves, who really want to chew it all up and watch every corner of the screen, will get a lot out of it, I think. Whereas the people who want to hate on it will hate on it, whatever, however good or, you know, even competently good, however it is, they'll bash it. So that's up to them. I've got no time for that. But if you want to soak it up and enjoy it, I think we're in for a good little ride soon. So,
and that kind of brings me to one of my first questions, and it has to do with Batch. You know, as we've seen, you know, over the last several months, you know, all the streaming services struggle a bit. It almost seems like maybe Bad Batch season 3 is kind of the beginning of the end of an era for Disney Plus, and you think about all the weeks, right? And, you know, I think I was maybe one of the most disappointed that Acolyte was going to run right up against Bad Batch, because, oh, okay, we're going to do that, much like last year with Bad Batch, you know, season two and Mando season three. But do you kind of feel that, you know, we've seen maybe the end of a season of content as long as Bad Batch, or maybe just because animation and this style of animation is so easy to produce that, you know, this is, you know, whatever they do live action, you'll still have maybe long seasons of animation?
That's a really good point. I'd not considered that. Yeah, I mean, Batch is, how many is it this year? Is it 14, 16, something like that? It's a good length. So, and it's a cracking show. So I'm definitely going to miss the Bad Batch. We got on a round table with the producers the other week. I think we put it out on Making Tracks. And I said, you know, it must, I'm paraphrasing myself, but it must be tough that you're in such a rich vein of form that now you have to stop the show, because it really is that the performances are great. Dee Bradley Baker's phenomenal always. You know, everybody that's involved in it is really working at sort of peak flow, and now it stops. And I'm personally certain that there's more animation coming. But as you say, you know, this very much follows on Bad Batch, especially in the lineage of where we started in 2008 with the Clone Wars movie, and we watched that evolution through the animation techniques through six seasons, and then Rebels, which was different, and then season seven Clone Wars, which was kind of a hybrid between Rebels and sort of original classic Clone Wars animation anyway, and then Bad Batch, which is completely in that vein of season seven Clone Wars. So whether or not we'll get more of that style, I don't know. But you make a great point in that, you know, Kenobi was six episodes, Book of Boba was seven, every episode of Mando is eight, Andor's 12, we're spoiled. And I kind of wish, and in fact, I really do wish that Andor had have been four seasons of six episodes rather than two seasons of 12, because I think as a fandom, we'd have got more out of it, and it would have lived with us longer and felt more substantial. Because you look at it on paper, two seasons of a show doesn't look like a lot. Three seasons of Bad Batch doesn't look like a lot, but there's going to be 48 episodes of Bad Batch at the end of season three. And there, if it's 16, if my maths is correct, I think it's 16. Or 24 episodes. Well, 24 episodes we've had 24 episodes of The Mandalorian. In three seasons, we'll have 24 episodes of Andor in two seasons. So it just depends on how they want to lay it out. And that's four seasons of Obi-Wan, if you really want to bash it. So, you know, so they are sort of changing their pitch on different things. But, yeah, I do wonder whether or not, until they announce the next animation, and again, I'm sure, I think Lucas Animation Hiring put a tweet out this week sort of saying they're looking for artists. So it could be for anything. I mean, the assumption is Star Wars, because they put a picture of the Bad Batch up. But you know, you'd like to think that there's more animation. What era? I don't know. I love that post Empire takeover, post Order 66, Fall of the Republic era that Bad Batch is in. And I'm certain season three is going to really throw some big guns at us in that regard. But then the comics have done a great job of moving us through the eras. But yeah, I would like to see more. I would like to see more animation. But you made another good point. I'm really rabbiting here, as I usually do. You made a really good point that we come straight off the back of Bad Batch, and potentially within, if not straight away, then within a few short weeks, could be into The Acolyte, completely different eras. You know, there's probably a century, best part of, difference between the two. You want the tone to feel different. That's one thing that I worry about sometimes when we bounce around different timelines of Star Wars, was back in the day, the OT felt very distinct from the prequel trilogy. So they had their own tone. And then as time went on, that the gaps were filled. But you didn't necessarily see the evolution of the tone of it, if that makes any sense. Because, you know, the OT was very 70s, and it, you know, especially Star Wars has that 70s feel. It couldn't not. But the prequel trilogy has a very sort of classic Errol Flynn 30s vibe to it. It's a different era. People spoke differently. Here on Earth, you go back 20, 30 years, which feels like nothing, but people were very different. And you don't realise it as it's happening. But when you look at it from a distance, tonally, it stands out. So when we see dramas here on Earth that are set 20, 30 years ago, you just kind of know when something's not right. That's not how people talked. That's not a word we used to use back then, you know. So they've got to get it right in that sense. So I really hope that Acolyte feels very, very different to anything else we've had, even to the prequels, which it's closest to. But I don't know, Star Trek, the 1 year Star Trek, I think they had 52 episodes of Trek week on week between, I think, Picard, Strange New Worlds, Discovery, and Lower Decks, and what's the other one? Oh, I've gone blank on the other animated show that they've got. But, you know, they managed to run a whole run of it without missing a week, which on one hand, as a Trek fan, was great. But on the other hand, I kind of like the little breaks in between. So let's see where they go with Star Wars. But it's a good point about long seasons. I've not considered that.
Well, and I even was thinking, I'm like, well, you know, for British television, it wasn't that surprising that, you know, you had short seasons. It might be, yeah, you know, like you'd have maybe an iconic show that only might be on for two series and that's it, or, you know, one, yeah, or two series. So it's probably a little more, you know, something you're more used to. And I think even with us, it's like, you know, when we see Doctor Who come over, it's like there's long gaps in between, but then it's relatively short. But I keep thinking when I hear about the things from Disney Plus and Bob Iger talking about, you know, how it's doing this, I still I see them either try to bunch up or they try to keep together, and you go, I don't know. Like, you're telling me you need to kind of spread it out a little bit, but yet you're still showing me that you're not, you still like to bunch it up. And so you still sort of feel like they're still trying to figure it out. And with each of these shows, like you're saying, everything has a slightly different tone to it. You know, it seems like on the one hand, they need to keep something out there to make sure they keep the subscribers. But on the other hand, I don't think we will see an overlap again, a major overlap like we did last year,
yeah,
for a while. And I don't think it would be smart for them. Like, I think you're like me. I'm fine. We grew up with gaps, large gaps at times, and plenty to do in between. But now it's like every time I see them, you know, like with Echo, and you go, really? Didn't we just go through, you know? And even with Bad Batch, where I love the fact that, you know, I loved Ahsoka's appointment time. You know, I think if, you know, look at Stranger Things, right? Stranger Things would come out, boom, done. But, you know, we got to where, you know, now it's, I get up in the morning and the first thing I do after I drop off the wife is, you know, with, you know, half an eye and my mobile phone, I'm catching up on the Bad Batch. But it was nicer when you could look forward to it coming out at that evening, and then you could sit down. Maybe the tone of the Bad Batch was such that it didn't really matter, but I'm hoping the Acolyte would maybe follow Ahsoka in going, look, we're totally fine, give it to us a little bit of time, but also allow all of us to watch it at the same time, because it's more of a group experience, right?
It totally is, and I think sometimes it's dictated by when these shareholder meetings are, which shouldn't have an influence on anything we watch or do, but I think it kind of does. And you say about Ahsoka being appointment television, which it really was, and certainly in the fandom. And I think it did quite nicely outside of the fandom as well. And, you know, it's getting plenty of awards notice, and certainly in the technical arena. So that's all great. But I think what bugs me with is, let's say Bad Batch, 14 episodes. So if they put one episode out a week for 14 weeks, like any other regular show would be, you know, back in the day, you didn't get two episodes of Next Generation and then the rest of the season, you know, you did one episode and that's how it went. So I kind of wish they did that. And if it was the case that, yeah, you know, every 14 weeks you'll get a live action show, and then, you know, the 14 weeks in between is an animated show. I don't know whether the fandom could take a Star Wars episode of live action or animation every week without breaks. I do think, like yourself, certainly older fans are more conditioned for gaps. And I don't think that's a bad thing, because the thing is, I'm looking at the back of my phone. I've got an Empire Strikes Back phone cover on my mobile phone. And I think to that Empire to Jedi gap, okay, I was a kid. I was, 11, 12, whatever I was. And it was a very different world, and the comics and the figures and the stuff that we had to hand was all we had, and our friends to talk about it in the playground. But there was, you know, numerous months and years to really think about what I'd seen. Not that kids think of it in the same way. We just want the action, the adventure. We want the latest toys and all that stuff. But it was a much, much slower world. It didn't feel like it, but it was. Now, if somebody had said to us in 2019, and here we are in 2024, you know, guys, he's still 2 years away at least from the next Star Wars film, you know, or I think what they're saying, 25 for Mando and Grogu and 26 for whatever's next, whatever the dates are.
you wouldn't believe it. And there's a huge chunk of the fandom would just look at that and go, ugh, I'll get into something else. You know, we were in a world back in the early days of Star Wars when there literally, I mean literally, was nothing else even on the level playing field, not even close to Star Wars. It was light years ahead of everything else. But now, if you're let's waggle the air quotes and say genre fan, there's Game of Thrones and there's Marvel, there's DC ramping up again with the Superman stuff. You know, there's so many things that you could be into. There's not a huge amount happening with Potter at the moment, but there's TV coming and you can go and see the live experience down at Leavesden, the Potter tour, and see Cursed Child on stage. You know, there's all these things you can go and do if you're a fan of other stuff. And Star Wars now is just in that mix with other things. But back in the day, you were more than ready to wait for it because, one, who did sequels back then? It wasn't really a thing. So you always felt grateful and glad that you were getting more. And two, you didn't know any different. So the thought of waiting for 3 years for a Star Wars film was like, okay, I've now seen Attack of the Clones. It's 3 years to Revenge of the Sith sort of thing. So it's weighing up the expectation and I think taking Star Wars from where it was when Disney bought it, which is, let's not forget, you know, a dozen years ago now, we still talk about it like it's just happened, but it's a, you know, it's a long time ago, that Disney had to, and Lucasfilm, because there were changes, obviously, had to balance the expectation of older fans who were probably quite patient in what they got and when they got it, to wanting to bring in a new generation who are raised on mobile phones, internet access, all the stuff that we have today, take for granted and think nothing of. But that also necessitates quick turnover, wanting stuff quickly. People get bored and tap out, move on to other things. And you don't want people to tap out of Star Wars because it's such a big beast. You want to keep feeding it. So you really are caught between two stools. I do feel badly for some of the people at Lucasfilm and Disney because to square those two things off, you're never going to make everybody happy. It's almost an impossible task. Mm.
Well, and you know, it's funny, and just thinking the longevity of all this, as you know, you just got back from Norway, right? You were in Finns.
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the most striking things, and I know that, you know, I was listening to the 45th roundtable because you got to go out to where they shot some of The Empire Strikes Back, the colder parts. but I couldn't get over, you know, there was one part of the roundtable where they were going over, it sounded like they were going over like a daily shot record. You're like, all right, it's this such and such date and we're doing this and this. And I'm like, we have to be the only fandom that would be like, could you get out the calendar and tell me exactly what you did this, this, this?
Yeah.
And although it sounds kind of silly, it's like, I was like listening on every word because you can go back and watch, you know, I even fired up Light and Magic last night and was listening to that Empire stretch again because I'm going, it's fascinating. And I don't care how many times I hear it or what you think is mundane. The poor people that, you know, that worked on it, they're like, really? You want to hear about that? But that had to be just riveting about things I think you probably already knew for the most part.
It was funny in that we were very fortunate. Fanta were invited over there to be a part of this Hoth Strikes Back event. We went there 6 years ago when it was Visit Hoth. Different organisers, different things, different guests. But this time we were a little bit more involved, which is for us very flattering to be asked. So Brian Cameron, one of my co-owners at Fanta, completely led that panel. And there's two panels. So Brian organised, wrote up, researched, just did all the work on that panel, which was on Fanta, on Making Tracks yesterday, I think, as we speak. And then we did a Q&A with the three guests. It was Christian Berham, who was a production assistant, Martin Gant, who was a special effects technician, and a very young one at the time, actually. It was fascinating how much he absorbed, really interesting fella, and Harald Løystad, who was the CEO of Fox Norway at the time. So they all had phenomenal stories, really interesting stories, and they came on later for a Q&A, which will be on Fanta within a couple of 3 weeks, and also we've videoed it all, so it's all going up on YouTube as well. Nice. But as you say, you know, when you get into it, and that was one of the questions in the Q&A, Martin said, you know, why are people still into Star Wars? And we try to figure out why people are into Star Wars, the impossible question. And what other fandom would travel, you know, and there was people from the States there was people from all over the world that come to this thing. We merely traveled from, you know, two of us from Scotland, two of us from England. You know, why would people travel to Norway, you know, into Bergen or Oslo and get the train halfway from east or west and meet in Finse, you know, to look out at a snowy escape with mountains in the distance and get a warm glow because, wow, you are literally looking at something that, you know, Ralph McQuarrie painted or whatever. You know, who else would do that? And we were trying to think of the fandoms. And as I often mention, I'm a Star Trek fan. And, you know, we were trying to figure out, well, what is, you know, people don't go deep dive into the making of the motion picture or Star Trek V or whatever it might be in the way that you do about a film like Empire. And so it's just trying to figure out all those details. And I think it's exactly what you said, in that you can put Light and Magic on or Empire of Dreams or any of the documentaries, you know, behind the scenes of any of the films that you love. And just for a brief time, when the peripheral vision disappears and all you're focusing on is the screen, you kind of feel like you're there with them on set. Mm. You kind of feel like it's happening around you and you get wrapped up in it because you know what's happening in the film. It just feels so much more tactile, especially the OT stuff. And I didn't say it in the panel, and I wish I had. It was a thought that I'd had, in the sense of, you know, when you're listening to something on the radio and you can't pause it. You know, we're in a world with DVRs and TiVos and stuff where you can pause a TV show, go and make a cup of tea, go to the toilet, whatever, come back and carry on. Or I'll just fast forward the adverts. And you go back not that many years, and if you wanted to watch a TV show, unless you were videoing it, which wasn't always guaranteed, you had to sit there and pay attention and watch it. That's why electricity would spike during the adverts on the TV show, because everybody would run out and make a cup of tea, you know, that sort of stuff. So it had your attention listening to something on the radio. You hear a song you like, you stop and listen because you can't pause it. But now we're in a world where you can pause it, you can rewind it, you can listen again. If you're not completely gripped, you're going, yeah, I'll listen to it later. You know, everything's attainable and disposable and catchable and easy to replay. And my analogy was a bit like, you watch a film now and you know that when you see a beautiful cityscape, that's rendered fully in 3D. And whoever's chosen that shot that you see on the screen has looked at 1,000 angles and they've landed on the one that they really love. And there's something about that that's very attractive and very impressive. But give me a Ralph McQuarrie map painting of the Death Star surface any day, because you know, intrinsically know, that you can't roto round that 360 degrees. You can't look at that from any angle. And so it's almost like there's more mystery in there, because what you see is what you see, and literally around the corner could be anything. I know that probably sounds like a weird analogy, but I just think there's a magic to the way that it used to be done. And I think when you go back to something like Empire and you see the spit and sawdust and the innovation and the, well, that'll work, let's do it that way-ness of it, you know, just to get it on camera. Dennis Muren says it all the time. If a piece of string and a bit of sellotape and a chicken leg or whatever makes it work, then let's do it that way, because it's all about what ends up on the screen. We're not winning, you know, we're not going to win any prizes for some clever innovation that does exactly the same as a hand puppet. So I love that. I think that's just fascinating. So when we did this talk, the panel that Brian led, and then the Q&A, it was just so fascinating to talk to these guys that were all there and they all got great stories. And so just to give it a bit of framework, when we did Brian did the panel, I was kind of co-hosting with him. We made it very clear. We thought it through before. We know that these three guys were all there. We know that they're going to have seen stuff and know stuff that kind of debunks what we're saying. So I sat with Brian over a cup of coffee and I says, maybe we should go out and do this panel and say, look, this is from Lucasfilm's point of view. This is what was in Alan Arnold's Once Upon a Galaxy. This is what was in J.W. Rinsler's Making of the Empire Strikes Back. This is the official version of what happened when they made Empire, and frame it that way. Hmm. And then do the Q&A, which again will be on Fanta fairly soon, and invite our guests to come on and go, right, rip that to bits. Rip it to bits. Everything we've just said, if you know better, if you know it's wrong, if you go, no, there was five of these, not four, or, well, that never happened, then please contradict us, because what we've done, Brian, has collated all this wonderful information that's sort of out there in books, but you guys were there. Rinsler wasn't there. Alan Arnold was there for bits of it, but you know, these guys weren't there. So just tell us how it was. And there was a few things when they went, well, that never happened. And I will tell you the funniest one, without going into too much detail. When Harrison Ford arrives on set, they decided that it was easier to get him out to Fince to film actually on location than to try and do sets in the UK at Elstree. So they flew Harrison out. And the truth of it was that he was basically picked up at the airport and he was driven to the hotel, and it was quite late at night. And on the travel, they stuck a bottle of whiskey away as they were driving through the snow. And there he was. And then 7:30 in the morning, next day, he's on set doing stuff, because he was only there a few days. Harrison Ford's story, which I won't spoil, is a lot more elaborate than that. Like, we went 3 hours in the wrong direction, nobody could speak English, all these different things. It's hilarious, the you know, the truth and the love, the beautifully embellished let's talk on Jimmy Fallon truth. So there's lots of little bits like that. It was I'm really rabbiting today, I'm sorry. It was fascinating.
Well, and there's two points that I absolutely love about that, and as you mentioned before, right, there's a lot of crew and actors who lived through this, worked through this. And I'm sure you either run into them on occasion, you know, when you do the various cons through. But yeah, I think there is a care in, you know, I was trying to remember as Dune is in theaters, and trying to remember when I first saw, you know, the film, you know, over 30 years ago, I saw it, the TV version. And, you know, I remember taking the book with me to basic training and all that. And, you know, sometimes, like, well, that was a very formative part of, like, you know, of my youth. But now I can't really recall, when did I see it? I knew it was a late night, you know, because it had been out already for 4 years or whatever. It was one of those late night, hey, we're going to play that 84 Dune, that crazy one, right? But now it's like, as you're trying, now we think of it now in more of a forensic term, where it's like, on what date, on this, and this is what I had, and all this. And so there is that mythology that, you know, like, even not even thinking about it, that I might be wrong in my facts, but for the most part, it's there. It's correct. I did see it then. It influenced me to probably buy the book. And then I saw the, you know, so with this, you know, now there's so much that is compiled and written that when you're talking to somebody, you know, you have maybe several different versions of it, you know, and some of them may have the Alan Smithy written to it, because it's like, well, that's kind of the gist of it. And so I think on one hand, I like approaching that going, hey, look, this is what it said, but I am still curious, because you still have those memories wherever, whenever, of you were here, this is what happened, that little piece broke and we had to do that again. I mean, you know, now kind of listening to famously Kirshner talk about, well, we were snowed in and we had to shoot it out there and everybody was nice and warm in the hotel, but you know, Mark Hamill was out there, you know, getting frostbite or whatever. And, you know, it's just, I guess we have to take that all in and kind of piece it together and probably come up with a version that kind of, you know, okay, it's going to debunk here and there, but for the most part, that's it. And that's what makes it great.
Totally that. And there is, as you say, quite correctly, there is no 100%. There isn't about anything. And two people can watch the same football match from the opposite ends of the stadium and have different opinions on the game. So there's definitely no one fixed thing. And all you can do is what Alan Arnold and Jonathan Rinsler did, and note down the date on this day they were in this location filming this, and this happened and such. And I guess if somebody was there on the day, they'll go, well, actually, what was written down didn't happen. They had to do this. So there's all these little adjustments and such. But I'm sure if you asked the next special effects technician who was stood 10 yards up the road his opinion, he'd go, well, I remember it like this. So you can only take what comes in. But it was fascinating. As I say, Brian, hats off, all the credits to Brian. It wasn't me. He did such a good job researching this, to the point that at the end of the talk, Harold, the CEO of Fox Norway, actually got up and said, thank you for such an interesting panel. So that was a nice tip of the hat to Brian. But yeah, it was fascinating just pulling all the pictures together. And also there was a moment, I think when we did the Q&A, and I hope it comes out in the video, I've not seen the video yet, but I hope it comes out, where the screen was down and the projector was projecting across and all the guests were on the stage. And you could see the projection on the guests, if that makes sense, because they were in front of the screen. So what we decided to do was just turn the projector off. And as we turned the projector off, the projector rose, and so all that you could see, and we're in Finster, we're literally looking out across the ice plain, the lake that freezes in the winter. All you could see was the white and the mountains and the rock poking through the mountains, just like in Empire. And it was just a moment where everybody just looked out the window and was like, wow.
Wow.
And then we close the curtains, and then it's that beautiful natural light that you get when it bounces off. You know, when you wake up in the morning, you know it snowed, the light's different. It was that. And looking out the window every 5 minutes, the clouds move, the light changes, it looks like a different view. It's quite incredible. My point is that to do a talk like that where they filmed it was well, I don't want to get too arty-farty, but it was quite a privilege. It really was quite a privilege. How often do you get to do a talk in a shooting location? Really, for Empire, Finster was the only external shooting location. Everything else, all the internal Echo Bay stuff was Elstree. Everything in the Hoth Cave, Dagobah, Cloud City, all of it in studio sets. Empire's probably got the most in studio stuff of any Star Wars film, or certainly classic Star Wars film. It was just Finster. So it was fascinating. And again, to have people who were there on set talking about it was just, yeah, very, very cool.
Hi there, this is Dan Zare from Coffee with Kenobi, and you are listening to the Rebel Base Card Podcast. Great poll, kid.
I'm sure this has been covered, and I was trying to think of this. The location, why did they pick that location? Because, I mean, obviously, you know, it gets cold in your neck of the woods and it snows a lot, but was it just because they could guarantee we're going to have tons of snow and all you're going to see is white all around?
I think when they scouted it out, it was just the... Two reasons. One, it just looks so beautiful, and they kind of knew seasonally, they knew that they would have the weather they wanted. And there's a press conference where Gary Kurtz was basically saying, bring on all the bad weather. It's exactly what we want, which was like the worst thing to say, because they got what they wished for and it wasn't what they wanted. So there was a lot of compromising in terms of where they shot. There were scenes they wanted to shoot where there was blue ice and they couldn't get up there. The weather was too bad. So and necessity, you know, meant that they had to shoot around the hotel. But really, as long as you're pointing in the right direction, it's just snow. And we literally, there's a hotel tour. The hotel's slightly different to how it was then, but basically the same. So we were on the, just to give some sort of framework of where we were on the second floor, I think. And literally the door next to us was... There was like Bill Weston, Kirshner, Kurtz, Hamill. They were sort of 10 yards down the corridor where they stayed. Our room was a four berth, and we didn't recognize any of the names on our room because it would have just been like four guys, get those four guys in there. But like all around us, you know, Peter Szyszycki's room was there, and Peter McDonald, the second unit director, who directed all the stuff after the first unit went back to Elstree. He carried on and shot, filmed and directed all the second unit stuff for the Hoth battle, which is, to be honest, most of it. So just fascinating. But yeah, there was that. And then also the railway, when you fly in, you can either fly into Bergen or fly into Oslo and then train it back. So Finster's, it's nearer Bergen. So we flew into Bergen, spent a couple of days there, which is beautiful, beautiful town. Did a fjord tour on the boat and saw all of that, which was fascinating. And then get the train, which was about 2.5 hours. To Finster. If you come from Oslo, it's quite a bit more. It's about 4 hours. But basically, you've got this railway that runs through. And the only thing that really would cause any issues is avalanches, which happens a lot. We had an avalanche warning on the Thursday. We were going out on the Friday. So we were like, are we even going to get there? That would have been a bit of a kicker. And there's no other way to it, because it is literally, it's the main street has got a railway running straight through it, you know, and there's nothing much else. But... for when they were filming it, yeah, they could film their stuff, get the film up to Oslo, fly it to the UK to look at the rushes and all that sort of stuff. So compared to now, it was prehistoric, but then it was actually quite logistically doable. So yeah, I think that's why they picked it. And also the Fox obviously had a presence in Norway, and they were 100% behind doing whatever, you know, Star Wars wanted and needed. And there was quite a cute moment in the panel where Brian mentions that everywhere else around the world, they were preparing to re-release Star Wars ahead of Empire coming back. But in Norway, they didn't have to do it because Star Wars came out the same time it did in the UK, December 77, and had never come off the cinemas. So when Empire's there, they didn't need to, or Empire was filming that, they didn't need to re-release Star Wars in Norway. It had never gone away. It remained in the cinemas. So that told you a little bit about how enthusiastic the Norwegians were for Star Wars anyway. So, yeah, I think there was a lot of different little elements that made Norway perfect. But I think really, if you, you know, flew over the landscape in a helicopter, you've only got to see it. It just rolls on and on and on. It was just beautiful.
Was that your first time or had you been there before?
We went 6 years ago. It was our first, well, as Fanthatrax, I think I would say it was probably our second big event in early 2018. I'd gone to Rancho Obi-Wan 2 days after we'd launched for the gala in 2017. But that was just me and Martin, who was with Fantha back then. But, yeah, this was the first sort of big group outing before any... Well, there wasn't any celebration in 2018, was it? It was 2019. So, yeah, that was the big one. So it was fascinating. I mean, last time we had the chance to go up to Hanrock and Chewy Rock on Huskies on the back of a sled. And so we went up and did that and felt the Wi-Fi was amazing, considering we're in the middle of nowhere. The Wi-Fi was fantastic. So we managed to live stream back, coming back down the mountain. And when you're at Han and Chewy Rock, you sort of look to your right and it's the plane, the ice plane, where... Yeah, I think it's the top of the glacier where you see the AT-ATs for the first time, the walkers. So there's all this incredible stuff around. But weirdly, we didn't do it this time. This time you had to ski up, and I don't think I was quite up for skiing. It was about a five-hour ski trip, and I was like, no, I don't think I'm up for that. But we did all the stuff around the hotel again. And as I say, you know, Han and Luke with the Tauntaun, slicing the Tauntaun, that's literally outside the back door. The bit where Luke rolls down the snow drift when he comes out the Wampus Cave, that's probably 10 yards out the back of the hotel door. It's just, it's incredible what's there. And there's more there now. They couldn't do it now because they've recreated a lot of other stuff. And, you know, it's a working hotel. So there's other things there that you probably couldn't do it quite the way you did it then. But when you see them, the doors, they open the doors and go, well, basically, Kirsch was sat here and the crew were there and Mark Hamill was just over there, and you're walking where they were 45, as it is. That was the anniversary, the 45th anniversary of filming it. I'm buzzing about it now. I've been back a week, and I want to go back.
Well, you know, and it's funny because I'm glad that they preserved that, because a lot of times you could see a location like this where there's a lot of activity, it's furious. Maybe some people are seeing something for the first time and going, what is all this? And then it's done and things go back to normal. And you don't really think about it. You know, not everybody is going to put up a plaque saying this is in this spot, you know, so such and such landed. But I'm incredibly happy that, hey, look, yes, it's still a functioning hotel, but you can put a marker up here. You know, everything it seems like these days, you know, gets torn down, rebuilt better. And, you know, maybe they put a marker down, but it's nice that they can, you know, remember this. And it becomes a part of, like, it continues to help Norway out, because it's like, well, people are going to go there and go, wow, this is where it was. And whether it's, you know, for the 45th or 55th or 75th, you know, it's fun and it still kind of gives on.
Totally. And the hotel, it's new owners. So new people have taken over. So they're very aware that there's this history, and that this is the hotel where all the cast and crew stayed. And there was another part of the hotel. So some of the actors, like Carrie, never stayed there. She stayed in the cabin. She only came out for a few days because she just wanted to kind of get a feel of it and be a part of the sort of the pre-filming publicity of it. Harrison Ford stayed in another part of the hotel that's not used now, in quite the same way. So you didn't see everybody's rooms, but a lot of them you did. But, yeah, so the hotel's aware of it. They're not bashing you over there. It's not like you walk in and there's a Tauntaun head above the door or anything. You know, they're not bashing you over the head with it. But it's definitely, if you know, you know. It's one of those places, and it's the, you know, it's the Finch Hotel 1222, they call it, Hotel 1222. So that's definitely an iconic Star Wars location. And you make a good point in that, no, there's no blue plaque. There's no specific place where they point and go, that's where Chewie shot the, or Han shot the probot or whatever. But there is, you know, this location, like Elstree, for example. I mean, Elstree's had terrible trouble. They've found asbestos in the roof. They've had to tear down three of the stages, 7, 8, and 9, and rebuild them. So they're still there, but they're not the original stages. Luckily, I'd been in them a few years ago, so I've visited that location, but they won't be the same. where they filmed the Ewok Village for Jedi got sold off to Tesco, our major supermarket over here, and it's now Tesco's car park, essentially, where the Ewok Village was. So when you're parking your car on a Saturday to get your shopping, you are literally where they filmed the Ewok Village scenes in Jedi. So there's lots of places that don't exist, and all the places from the prequels where they filmed Mos Espa and so on. You know, the Sands have taken a lot of those sets away. They've just covered them, and they're going within not that many years. They won't even be accessible. So there's lots of places that you can't get to. But this, if you go at the right time of year, don't get me wrong, if you go sort of in the summer, it's not green and clear and perfect. It's very, very slushy because there is a lot of snow. It doesn't completely disappear. But nevertheless, if you go at the right time of year, as soon as you pull up and get out off the train, it's like, yeah, you can see it. It's literally the back of the hotel. There's the lake. There's the mountain. You go over, I think it's called Norman's Folly, named after Norman Reynolds, if I remember. And you go over the other side of that, and then you're at a lot of the locations where they shot. Yeah, it's fascinating.
Hi, this is Femi Taylor. I play Ula in Return of the Jedi, Jabba the Hutt's slave dancer. You're listening to the Rebel Base Card Podcast.
I'm going to bring you a few years ahead. And this year is the 25th anniversary of The Phantom Menace. And so, you know, as you're saying, we go to a much different place. We get a much different tone. But could you take me back a little bit and talk about how it must have felt and what it was like for you before that movie hit the theaters?
Wow. So all right, let's go back to 98 then, before the trailer hits. I was fanfic crazy, so that was my big thing, was fanfiction. And Star Wars is still ramping up, and Star Trek's having its golden decade, and I'm a Trek fan. So for me, the 90s, a big chunk of the 90s was true. Star Trek and Babylon 5. So that was the two biggest for me in a lot of that decade. But Star Wars has just been coming up on the outside rails. You know, we've kicked off the early 90s with, obviously, AT Empire, Dark Empire. Dark Horse is doing all that great stuff. Hasbro rings the figures back. All the build-up is there. And then we've had the special editions, which were obviously amazing. So at that point, I was running a website called Wirezone, which was a general sci-fi site, but pretty quickly it became a Star Wars fanfic site. So I'm now really honing in on the Star Wars-ness of everything again, because I can see it's all coming back. And then, of course, that trailer hits and 56K downloads, sitting there with a microscope watching a 2-inch wide screen, trying to wait for it to load for 5 hours, as we did. And I think that was it then. We were all off to the races. So for Phantom, for me, my oldest friend Paul, me and him had been to the States a couple of three years before, went to visit a friend in Connecticut, and said, this is back when I was working for my dad, and I'd get like two weeks holiday a year. Most years I'd just work it and get paid so I could save up for holidays. So I didn't have any holiday time off. I worked it. So I was working pretty hard and managed to get enough together that we could go and do California for 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Like a driving holiday. And that was the plan. So we flew into LA. We drove up to San Francisco, spent a day in San Francisco, went around the Presidio before Lucasfilm were there, did all this cool stuff in San Francisco, then drove to Vegas, took a couple of days. And got to Vegas and then realized we were going to drive to LA to join the queue to go and see Phantom on the opening night, because this was the May and they'd messed up the hotels. So we just stayed in Vegas. What a terrible thing for two guys in their 20s to have to do. So we stayed in Vegas for 4 days. And whilst we were there, Phantom came out. And oh, just to say, on the way in, we'd stayed for 2 days in Chicago. So we'd been to Chicago on the way in. You could have a layover. And I'd bought all the Phantom merch, all the making of book that came out, and the soundtrack and the novel and all that stuff, everything but the figures, because I thought, I don't want to carry the figures back. So so we got all of that. Then we saw Phantom at the showcase by the MGM Grand on opening night, first screening, people in their lightsabers, costumes. This is just after the 501st have started, so there may have been a couple of 501st guys there, but loads of people in costume, and every other person had a lightsaber. And the place went bananas when the scroll up comes and the old Fox intro, which is still the best intro for Star Wars. I'll die on that hill. And I've got to say, I came out after seeing it the first time, and I've told this story before, walked across the car park to get a beer with Paul at whatever time, silly o'clock in the morning it was, and just turned to him and went, what the was that? Because I just didn't get it. So we got up nice and early the next morning, relatively, went and got tickets, watched it again, second time, Yeah, actually, that's pretty good. Yeah. And by the time we came back to the UK, bearing in mind this is still May and it didn't come out in the UK until mid-July, back in the day when there was the big gaps and, you know, we didn't get everything on the same day. I'd seen it six times in the States before I came back. So when I get back, and I was very fortunate, and I shouldn't say this as somebody who writes for the official magazine, but I did have a pirate copy. So I was able to watch it before it came out on the cinema, but which I think I've still got somewhere. Yeah, it was a grower. It took time to grow on me. So, but I think that the key thing was, this was before I started doing news sites, which was still a few. I didn't really start doing news sites per se until after Revenge of the Sith had come out. But it was mostly the fan fiction was the focus, and with a bit of news, and then that started to build up. And we did a refresh in 2005. But just to have Star Wars back was incredible, and I always felt that Phantom especially had the real sort of rough end of the pineapple, because when you know any other film you compare like for like, so you can go, I don't know, pick any. I like Ace Ventura 1 better than Ace Ventura 2. You know, you can only compare one film to another. But poor old Phantom Menace was being compared to the Holy Trinity of all movies, the greatest trilogy that had ever been made, the biggest box office hit ever. You're not comparing Phantom Menace to A New Hope or to Jedi or to Empire. You're comparing it to the love and adoration that all three had on the back of a special edition re-release as well. So Phantom Menace could have been the Citizen Kane of all movies. But of course, Citizen Kane is the Citizen Kane of all movies, but you take my point. And sort of compared it, and it would never stack up. So I think Phantom had the toughest job, tougher than Force Awakens, tougher than any other sort of returning trilogy or returning movie. And actually, I think over the years, Sith is as good as it ever was. Clones, I've got a real love for Attack of the Clones, where I know a lot of people don't. That's a go-to film for me. I just love the feel of it, the tone. It's very different to all the other films. The music's gorgeous. There's something about Clones that really works for me. But Phantom Menace went from being probably a 5 to now, for me, it's a solid 8. No other Star Wars film has gone up in my estimation like Phantom Menace. So I've got a real soft spot for Phantom.
Oh, that's... There's a lot to unpack there. And I never really thought... That's a great point of, like, you know, Phantom Menace had to go up against our... memory, our myth of the original trilogy. And so on the one hand, you have that excitement and the expectations. I don't know how they could have met and exceeded the expectations of folks that at this point had grown up and had through different part of their lives. And now you have this. If a new film comes out now, it gets stacked up against, you know, a large stack. It's like a new Star Trek film, right? You've got you've got this one that's better than this one, or you get the even numbers this, but Phantom Menace had that task that none of the other films had, that you go, you have to go up against my awesome memories of however good or bad that film was. And I even think about it as I lean back, because I think you're right. When I kind of came out, and, you know, the first time, of course, I'd had more than a few. So that it's the second and third time that I really kind of got traction on what's going on. Hey, we're adults, right? George made it for kids, but we weren't kids, and we weren't drinking kid drinks. But, you know, over the course of time now, you have you have all that to go back and look at. And so now I can find myself going back, especially this year, and rewatching it and looking at some of the content around, you know, building it up and all that. And I could sit and listen to Rick McCallum all day now. There's no bigger cheerleader. I kind of miss his cheerleading for Star Wars. But yeah, I mean, even with the other ones, they're finding their place. And I think what will be nice is that as we go along and we start celebrating the anniversary of some of these other ones, I think they're going to get a fair shake. You know, at some point, Solo is going to get a fair shake, or, you know, The Phantom Menace or The Last Jedi or any of the sequel ones. Whereas, you know, Rogue One, a little different, right? But yeah, I think once you kind of get done and you go back to it, I think it's going to be fun to go back into the theaters this year. And I'm hoping they do it, you know, in the U.S. as well as the U.K. and allow us to go back in now with this, you know, with this kind of expectation. Now we're going, we want to go see The Phantom Menace in the theaters, and it's going to probably exceed our expectations this time.
I think you're right, actually. And there's that whole generation. I mean, you mentioned the sequel trilogy, how in time, it's 10 years next year since Force Awakens. I cannot believe that. It's ridiculous. Just ridiculous. But how, you know, that was a monster hit, you know, 2 billion plus and just crazy. And that the people who weren't so enamored with the sequel trilogy will move on and new people will come in and they'll see them as fresh and no baggage and they'll just watch them as films and they'll love them. And so now there's almost a, around the prequel trilogy, there's almost a, I don't know what the word is, but when those films came out, they weren't the most beloved films because, as I say, they were being compared to, you know, the original trilogy, which its legacy was concrete, secured, and, you know, it won't change in the minds of the people that watched it. It will change in the minds of new kids coming in because they'll watch Star Wars and go, blimey, this film's slow. You know, so I get, you know, we have to accept that compared to modern films, and they are slow compared to the prequel trilogy. The sequel trilogy will get its flowers eventually and be reappraised. Solo, you mentioned Solo. I think Solo is a fantastic film. So I think the world missed the boat on Solo. Mm-hmm. And I think Disney needs a rap on the knuckles for releasing it when it did. It really does. That was a Christmas movie all day. It wouldn't have done a billion, but it would have done 700 or 800 million. It would have done double what it made comfortably, and we'd view it far more fondly. And Rogue One now with Andor, and Rogue One's a fantastic film anyway, but Rogue One, Andor embellishes Rogue One in the same way the Clone Wars embellishes Clones and Sith. So, you know, Star Wars is unique in that now, because it's such a monster storytelling sort of platform and canvas, that most things that we get, and that's why I'm excited for Acolyte, because it kind of steps out of that a little bit, but most things that we get will embellish what we've already seen. So Bad Batch is embellishing Revenge of the Sith, and, you know, Andor's embellishing Rogue One, and, you know, whatever we get post. I mean, even the comics aren't going past Jedi at the moment, because I don't think they're saying this, but my vibe is that Mando's sort of realm, the Mandalorian or the Mandoverse realm, probably starts after the last frame of Return of the Jedi. And so anything that steps into that is probably off the books at the moment, which is my gut tells me that's why the comics haven't got past Jedi yet, which they should have done like Easter last year, which is only a year between Empire and Jedi. So there's areas that are sort of still in flux. But I think once you get past wherever the end of the Mandoverse is with the, I guess, the Filoni movie, whenever that happens, then, you know, that will start embellishing the sequel trilogy. I kind of hope we get more stuff that adds to that sequel trilogy sort of world building. And we are kind of getting it a little bit in Bad Batch now with, you know, the Project Necromancer stuff and, mm-hmm. and all of that. So there's definitely long threads, and not many other sort of storytelling worlds do it like Star Wars does. And a lot of it's after the fact, but a lot of Star Wars was serendipity. A lot of things that we latched onto were kind of inferred, not written in stone. So as long as they're cautious and clever about what they pick as the, you know, the path to take, then, you know, I think they should be okay. There's a lot of ground to sort of fill in.
And I also think, you know, just given the climate for how, you know, the Marvel movies have done, I'm almost kind of happy that we're not seeing a Star Wars film at this particular moment, because I think that as we come out of COVID and, you know, you're seeing the patience of, you know, people that, you know, they go to a film and they're not happy with the current state of where maybe Marvel films are. And you saw that with, you know, at an extreme level. It's not fair to pick on Madam Web or the Marvels or things like that, where, you know, or some of the ones last year, and you notice they've slowed those down. On the one part, I am happy that it is a while, because on the one hand, I want that build up to the next Star Wars film, regardless of what story they tell. But on the other hand, you fear for it coming out and either being a dog by maybe it was too much in committee, or, you know, they were rushed or things like that. I'm like, please take your time, because I don't, you know, like, I'm hoping that, you know, like when we see with Dune and the reaction it's getting, where it's like, okay, even though it's a remake, it's a better telling of Frank Herbert. And now that seems like they've completely figured out how to do it. I want Star Wars, I want Lucasfilm and Disney to completely figure out how to do a next Star Wars film, because I want to root for its success, and I want it to be successful. I'll go see anything, but I really want that. I really want it to do well, and however much time you need to do it, please take it.
I couldn't agree with that more. And I think because you know, you do podcasts, I do podcasts, we're Team Star Wars, so we go in wanting to love it. And when you see something like Dune, we're rewatching the first one right now. We've probably got half an hour to go. And then we're seeing Dune 2 tomorrow as we speak. And I'm so excited and so enthused by just the almost universal praise of people from what they've seen in that second film. I'm really keen to see it. I want that for Star Wars. You won't get it for Star Wars because negativity in Star Wars fandom is monetized now. There's money in clicks. There's just clout in being a dick about something that happened on Ahsoka for some reason, so which I've got no time for. I can't be bothered getting into it on social media. I don't really anyway, but I just, my mute button has never been, it's white hot at the moment. And sadly, X and or Twitter, whatever they're calling it, is making it so much more difficult to do anything practical like that these days. I think a lot of people are going to be stepping away from that fairly soon, I would imagine. But I want all Star Wars to be liked, and it's weird that sometimes you kind of feel like you have to stand there and defend it. Mm-hmm. When the thing about Star Wars, as we've said, is, I think it's unique in a lot of media, in that even when they put out a series like Ahsoka and it's out in the world, pick that as an example, it's completely a work in progress. It's completely a work in progress. The whole story isn't told. You could look back at Rise of Skywalker. Everyone throws up that line, somehow Palpatine returned. And now Lucasfilm are going back and they're seeding it into comics, and they're seeding it into books like, you know, Shadow of the Sith, or there's elements in Bad Batch, and there's going to be more stuff as we go, and there's certainly bits in Mando that all will eventually, when you step back and in 10 years time some kid comes along and goes, like we've had it for years, what order should we watch the Star Wars films? Well, you should start with 4 and 5 and then watch 1, 2, 3 and then watch 6. No, just watch 1 to 6, you know, or whatever, however you want to do it. That they'll go, this whole Emperor coming back thing, what, how should I watch it? Well, go back and watch this episode of the Bad Batch and then read this book and whatever. It's however you want to consume it. But you see, you take my point. It's going to be in the long run, because there's so much depth to Star Wars. You can't just throw it all out at once. Loads of it again. It'd be like a Lucasfilm press release. You know, oh, we're making 3 new films. Oh, and John Williams is doing music to all of them. You know, it's always like, oh, and by the way, Dave Filoni's making season 2 of Ahsoka. What? You know, so it's, you'd miss so much of it. So I think there's a, for older fans, I think patience is the key. And we've been patient in the past. We're used to waiting for Star Wars. So being patient for things to unfold, things to envelop, things to be revealed, shouldn't be a stretch. It's tougher for newer fans who want it now. And if they don't get the answers there and then, I'm a wrestling fan. I'm watching the build up to WrestleMania 40 with all the Cody Rock bloodline stuff, fascinating stuff. If people don't get the answers on Friday night watching SmackDown, they're losing their minds. It's like, hang on, Raw's on Monday. You know, follow WWE.com, follow them on social media. It's all out there. You know, just have a bit of patience. It's that disposability of things coming too fast compared to the, just wait, this is a petal unfolding in its own time. Just let it blossom and, you know, you'll get more out of it. And it's the journey. It's like anything. It's the journey's always the most interesting part of any of this.
Hello there. This is Greg Cass at Ion Cannon, and you're listening to the Rebel Base Card Podcast. Great pull, kid.
And I think you put your finger on it, and that's something I've been thinking about, The Acolyte. Now, The Acolyte is, you know, 100 years before The Phantom Menace, but it comes after a lot of the elements of the High Republic. And although, like, I started with the first book of the High Republic, and then I kind of, just because there was so much, I couldn't keep up. But I think that's an interesting entry point, that The Acolyte could, you know, help people kind of discover that part and however much they want to ingest of it. But it also gives them, at the same time, a blank canvas to go, we can tell some new stories. You're going to get some vibes of this and that. But afterwards, you may want to go back and go, oh, I want to learn a little more about that. Yeah. And now all those folks who have been working, you know, diligently on the High Republic and all the fans that are enjoying it may actually go, yeah, see what we've been saying all along? It's great. You just needed that entry point, and maybe this is another way to go, hey, here's a way to kind of enjoy the time before, and if you want to learn more, go back and see this.
That's a good point, especially with the Acolyte. And the Acolyte's got a tricky job for a number of reasons. One, because of when it's set, because it's kind of away from other stuff. We don't know how far after Phase 3 of the Horror Republic it's set, really, because that's still ongoing. We don't know really what's coming between there and Phantom. We can kind of see the links between the two eras, but that's yet to be fleshed out. So some people may or may not be patient enough to sort of ingest that in the way that hopefully it will be. The storytelling of the High Republic has been very detailed. There's a lot of it. I can't pretend to have kept up with all of it. I do read the comics, which I really enjoy, especially Kevin Scott's run on the Horror Republic, the ongoing Horror Republic title. The rest of it is, because there's only so many hours in the day, it is a case of heading to Wikipedia to kind of get the cliff notes, just so you're kind of on top of the broader scope of it. But what I have read of it, I really enjoy. And I think you're right. I think when Acolyte's really up and running and people are, especially the early episodes, and people are really reaching for stuff to connect to, because that's kind of a Star Wars thing, I think those books and comics will really come into their own as something to sort of put an ice pick into and sort of hang on to, because that will feel like there's a connective tissue between the two, almost in the sense that the end of Revenge of the Sith was completely leading you up to A New Hope, because they never thought they'd fill in that gap. Mm-hmm. That was, the circle was complete and that was it. And we wouldn't do anything. And yet you think what sat in that gap between those two movies that kind of bookended each other. You know, we've had Bad Batch, we've had Solo, we've had Rogue One, we've got Andor, you know, we've got Rebels, and there's all this other, Kenobi, there's all this other stuff that's in there that has now filled in that gap. So I think Acolyte's in for a tricky one, and also in the sense that one of the things I always really loved about Phantom Menace, and you look at world history in eras, but I think in Phantom Menace, the big era for me, the big moment, almost historically the biggest moment, and you can pick loads if you want to, was from the macro scale of a human kid winning the pod race to Qui-Gon and Maul clashing on Tatooine. And it was always said that was the first time a Sith and a Jedi clashed for 1,000 years. You'd had no Sith sticking their head above the parapet for a millennia. And yet you look at the Acolyte and it very much feels like there's going to be Sith in that. So whether I'm really curious to see how they frame it. Are they dark Jedi or are they Sith just masquerading? Do they clash with the Jedi? If they do the Jedi get out of it? Is it because we only know of this clash between the two because one side has walked away from it? So I'm really interested to see how they play that, because the temptation is, of course, you kind of want that. You go back to the old Republic game and all the great trailers we got, and you'd have like 1,000 Sith red sabers, 1,000 Jedi blue and green sabers all clashing and fighting in a temple. Amazing stuff. That, I guess, the temptation in the Acolyte is we want something like that. And it's whether or not, I don't know, a Pablo Hidalgo can go, well, actually, you can't really do it that overtly because the Sith are supposed to be hidden. And this is the whole point of their power, is they've had generations of playing the long game, of just keeping on the underground and underpinning and undermining rather the tenets of the Republic, to the point where Palpatine's the one that can make the power grab, because all the props that hold everything up are so wobbly, it's easy to knock them down. That intrigues me. How are they going to play it in the Acolyte? Are they going to just ignore that thought that, wow, Qui-Gon and Maul fighting, that's the first time a Sith and a Jedi blade has touched for 1,000 years. That was always the feel. How are they going to play it? So I'm very intrigued by that.
And it's interesting that it happens to debut on the 25th anniversary of The Phantom Menace, because I think they get another chance to set the table, just like The Phantom Menace did, to kind of look, hey, we're going to take you back to a different time. It's going to be Star Wars. It's going to feel like Star Wars, but it's not going to look like Star Wars that you've seen. And I think this is another chance for them to go, to kind of reset and go, we're going to take you to a different time. And now with the hindsight of all you've seen and known, it's going to be interesting. And I know they're going to do it well, but I think they have an opportunity to really open some eyes if people kind of come at it, you know, in the era where we can be very divisive if we want to, and like you said, there's a lot of money in it. If it plays its cards right, it could really open up to all fans and going to go, oh, well, you know what? Maybe I didn't like the prequel so much, but now after kind of seeing this, well, let me go back and kind of look at that again and go, oh, I can kind of now connect the dots. Whereas, you know, The Phantom Menace, as you're saying, like, it had so much of a load to carry. It's so interesting that The Acolyte comes out, you know, what, you know, right around, you know, we're going to go into May, you know, May the 4th and all that kind of stuff. You know, now I'm starting to get excited about it, whereas before I was like, let me just ingest Bad Batch. But now I'm like, oh, I really want to see where this goes now.
It's funny in that, like you say, when Phantom came out, for, I don't know, 98% of people who went to see Phantom Menace would have only seen the films and never read the books. So in, what, early 90s, Dark Horse did Tales of the Jedi and that, you know, Dark Lords of the Sith and that sort of era of comics that we had back then. And for people who were into Star Wars and reading the books, which were easy to keep on top of back then, and the comics, which was, again, certainly easy to keep on top of than today, when there's so much coming out every week, that you were familiar, you were aware of other eras in Star Wars, which I think is why there's that sort of Old Republic, High Republic, you know, that era, sort of, not High Republic, the Old Republic, is held in such high regard, because it was one of the first times we stepped outside of the OT kind of sphere. But then you get to Phantom, as you say, and it's going back 32 years, and it's a totally different era. And there's certain characters that we see that we know, like obviously Yoda and a younger Ben and R2 and 3PO. So there's enough of a touchstone there and early Palpatine, even though back in the day they never overtly said, well, this is definitely the Emperor. They let you wonder whether or not they were two separate characters for quite a long time. That was such a sea change. And I was reading, I keep talking about Star Trek, but I think it's a good parallel. I read a piece the other day, and it was like a TV guide type piece that said, you know, I can't think what the date it was, it's September of 1987, they're launching a new Star Trek series called Star Trek The Next Generation, and all the Star Trek fans of the original series were losing their minds, thinking it was silly, and how can you do that? It won't work, it's ridiculous. And then look what we got. You know, most of Trek now feeds off that TNG onwards kind of, you know, success and tone, certainly, to the point of having Picard come back and have a wonderful series there. But in Star Trek at that time, you'd only really had the Kirk era stuff. Mm-hmm. Nobody had stepped out of that outside of fan fiction. In Star Wars, we kind of had. But now, as you say, come back to today and The Acolyte, and again, we're in a world where if I could eternally banish one word from the English language, I think you can guess what it is. It begins with a W and rhymes with yoke. I would abolish that word, because that word gets misused so often that it frizzles my brain. It's going to come in because it's got female lead, because it's got this, it's got that. People are just going to label it with whatever they want to label it with. And it's starting from the back of the grid before it even, you know, the green light is on. So Star Wars inherently these days is up against it. I don't know what the optimum Star Wars thing to release right now would be. You know, if you looked and said, right, you've got a blank slate, Greg, you can release any Star Wars stuff you want, anything at all, whatever you want, go for it. You know, if it was me, I'd be like, oh, Han and Lando. Well, the Han film didn't do so well, and the Lando film may or may not happen. It feels like that's years and years away. A Luke Skywalker series, well, it won't have Hamill in it, so half the people won't accept it because it's not Hamill. I'm of a mind that we should just recast with younger actors. I want Luke Skywalker stories. Mm-hmm. You know, let's make the guy look as much like Hamill as we can reasonably make it, but I'm not, you know, Alden Ehrenreich, I'll be honest, is as much Han Solo to me as Harrison Ford. Harrison Ford is Han Solo, is the original Han Solo, but look at that. Solo was a great film, and Alden was brilliant in it. So it's like, I want more of that. I want more Han and Chewie. So I want to see the Falcon flying around. I want that, and I can't do it with an 82-year-old Harrison Ford. So let's do it with Alden, who's probably getting towards aging out of it. I mean, Solo was made 7 years ago, don't forget. So, you know, he's pushing into his 30s now. So they need to get a move on with that. But, you know, I don't think you could pick one thing. Well, nobody could, because everyone's got their own opinions and views. But I don't think there's one thing that is, yeah, that's going to work going forward. So why not, you know, you know, aim for the, you know, the pitch for something really out there and do something like the Acolyte and be brave and give us a new era and try and develop something new. So yeah, I think me, I'm very rabbiting today, but I think you're absolutely right. I think coming out on that date is or near that date is quite relevant actually.
Well, and yeah, I like that pushback question of like, what would you release? And I think if someone, I think if you polled, you know, 10, 20, 100 people, I think you'd get that many answers of like, mm-hmm. what's right. I don't know if we know. So we just kind of, you know, what we kind of do is kind of hope that Lucasfilm, you know, via Disney Plus, you know, use the tools that you have, whether it's the comics, the books or whatnot, put out good stories, take the time to do good stories. And I think some of that takes care of itself. I you know, like, and just don't rush it. And, you know, you bought the company. It's not like it's going to go away or go back to Lucas. And, you know, I don't think he'd want it even at this point because he finished his run. You know, he just wants a good steward. And we want good stories. And, it sounds easy, but it's hard. And a lot of people are doing their darndest to try to make, you know, the best that they can. And you just kind of go along with it.
Hey there, this is Ross Holubin from the Album Cockpit Podcast, and you're listening to the Rebel Base Card Podcast. Great pull, kid.
You know, let me ask you some easier question as we kind of wind things down a bit. And you at least know what your schedule is this year. You know, we came off Celebration year, we're in between, but that doesn't necessarily mean that in your neck of the woods or whatever you decide to do in the States. You do have a handle on what FanthaTrax can cover. What are some of the things you're kind of looking forward to and kind of gearing up for?
Yes, that's a good point. It is going to be a busy year and it is a non-celebration year. So I think, well, let's start off. So nothing much over the next month or so. There's not a huge amount, although this weekend is London Comic Con Spring, which I couldn't make it to. That's happening right now. So that's fairly busy, but I don't think we've got anybody there for that. But once we get to sort of late April and into May, obviously May the 4th weekend. So at the moment, the plan is, it's a very busy month, May. We're at the National Space Center on the Saturday, the 4th of May. And on the 5th or on the evening, we drive up to Blackburn for Star Wars Fan Fun Day, which is a wonderful event, which I recommend to everybody. And we're covering that. The following weekend is Portsmouth Comic Con down on the South Coast. Wow. The end of the month, where are we? London for the XL, actually, where Celebration was, for MCM Expo London, or MCM London, I should say. So that'll be busy. And then once we get into June, there's it feels like, from memory, there's sort of something every other weekend. There's lots of stuff going on around the country. I know we've got a Farthest From coming, which is the vintage event. There's one of those in the summer. At the moment, we're hoping to be at New York Comic Con again in October. Myself and my wife Ruth and my sister and her husband and two of my nephews are doing Orlando in September for a couple of weeks. I'm very much looking forward to that. And yeah, it's a busy one. I'm really hoping there's a Rancho Gala this year, Rancho Obi-Wan Gala. When was the last one? The last one I went to was 2017. The last one was 2018. Wow. And of course, COVID happened and they'd planned ones and didn't happen. And then last year, tragically, Anne Newman's husband Stu passed away, so that, you know, that never happened. So hopefully this year the wheels are sort of coming back on the wagon and there can be something, because selfishly I love that place and I really, really want to go back and see everybody and visit it again because it's been so long. And also you're on the right side of the coast to sort of get up to the Presidio and catch up with friends there, so that would be amazing. But yeah, like you say, I mean, it's we're into March now and it's April next year for Japan, which is going to come up on us really quickly. And I'm personally convinced, I have no inside knowledge, I wish I did, but I don't. But I'm personally convinced that they will either announce a US celebration for the back end of next year, like 2007 when he had Europe and Celebration 4. Mm. I've got a sneaky feeling that might happen because it's, you know, when was Anaheim? 2022?
Yes.
So 3 years, if not four, because there'll certainly be one in 26 and obviously one in 27 for the 50th. But I've got a sneaky feeling there might be a US one next year. I don't know, but that's just a gut feeling because it just feels like too long between the shows. Where they have it, I don't know, whether, you know, it's 26 being Anaheim or Orlando and vice versa, whichever one they want to pick as the location. I don't know, but yeah, Japan's a long way for people in the States to go to, let alone people in the UK and Europe. So it's a jaunt, but for us, it's a, you know, it'll be a once in a lifetime thing. I don't think I'd ever get back that way again, but who knows? We'll see. But yes, it's very busy in Fantherland. It always is.
Well, and even last year, you know, cause we had gone, you know, we had gone to London, and I did not realize, you know, like I kind of, you know, as we were picking areas, I kind of picked Earl's Court.
Yeah,
you know, around Kensington, that it was like, all right, this was an affordable place, but I did not realize I was so close to the Olympia. I did know that I was close to a TARDIS, that there's a police box right in front of that tube station. And, you know, it was one of those things that was one of the highlights was getting my picture taken with that. And it wasn't the main reason we were there, but it was in the top five of the reason. But I did not realize that London Film and Comic-Con was basically down the street and about 3 weeks earlier. So my hope is like when I'm thinking of like, okay, what could you possibly do if there's like, there's a lot of these once in a lifetimes, but I'm like, it'd be fun to go to a con outside the US. I'm like, well, all right, now at least I could go to maybe a place where it's like, oh, I've kind of been there. I kind of know where that is. And, you know, maybe at one of these times I can kind of break away and, you know, take a little trip so I can visit another country and go inside a building instead of going to the museums and all the great architecture. It's like, yeah. I want to be inside a room with a lot of folks in temperature that raises, you know, exponentially during the whole weekend and look for plastic toys. That's what I consider to be a great holiday.
I tell you one thing you would love then, given that's the brief. In April, there's an event called Echo Base, which is my neck of the woods, about 40 minutes from me. And it is it's everything vintage, you know, prequels, sequels, everything. It's a collecting event, and they get folks come from literally all around the world to this thing. And yeah, that's a very, very interesting day. It's packed, it's busy, great bargains. Most of the UK sort of collector scene are there for that, but you'd love LFCC. They have a Star Wars zone, so Fantha's been in that for about 6 years, and hopefully again this year. That's always good fun, shaking the tin for charity as well, which is great with the Rebel Legion and the UKG and the Mandos, the Saber Girl, Dark Empire, all those guys. So we have a lot of fun doing that. And MCM is like a mini New York Comic Con, so they lay it out quite similar, and that's not a huge Star Wars focus, but a lot of fun as well. So yeah, you'd have a good time. Whichever one of those you manage to get to, you'd have a good time.
Oh, that's awesome. And I do like the fact that there are many events, whether big or small, that collectors can kind of get to. And you love seeing that with the chapters, the 501st and Rebel Legion and all that, where, you know, it doesn't have to be a celebration that you go to. It's like, you can have fun at your local library. You can have fun at, you know, hey, everybody meet up at a swap meet or something like that, where we can just come and enjoy the Phantom, you know, the fandom and all that. The Phantom. Yeah, that's
the Phantom. Yeah, that works. Yeah.
Where's the stickers for that? Somebody get
it's going on a patch.
Somebody get your bosses on the phone so we can talk about that. But anyway, that it's just fun, and what I like is especially listening to, you know, Fantatracks, Fantatracks Radio and all the Making Tracks ones, where I can go to farthest from. I can go to some of these events and hear some of the people that I don't get a chance to talk to, you know, whether they're a little salty about like what roles they may have gotten afterward or not. But it is kind of fun because it's a different perspective, and there's so many resources that you folks have that you go, hey, these are great stories, and we get a chance to see them in different environments, and fans get a chance to. And so I just encourage folks to check out, you know, Making Tracks, you know, when you and Mark talk, or, you know, like during, you know, Planet Leia, or, you know, all the different podcasts that you guys have, because there's so much there that people can enjoy and just really expand their fandom.
I really appreciate that. That's very kind. Yeah, we are lucky being where we are. And I think it helps being a little bit older. You got probably a little bit more brazen going up to people and having a chit chat about this, that, and the other. And yes, you do get some that are a bit salty. It still sticks with me that the one guy that was the saltiest that ended up being really sweet was Michael Culver, who, when I started talking, really didn't want to be disturbed from reading his book. And by the end of it, gave me a great big smile and was as lovely as anyone. So that was kind of fun. So, yeah, you do get that. And some of the guys, even the guys that worked on Empire, Bill Wesley and guys like that, who was sort of literally in the trenches on in Fincer on Hoth, are like, well, it's just a bloody movie, you know, and that's their sort of memory and recollection of it. And others like Martin Gant, who was the special effects guy, who absorbed and soaked up so much detail, absolutely fascinating, and was very much a junior on that film, who's now in his 70s, but like was, you know, his mid-20s back then, who you know, went on to work on some incredible films, you know, some Passage to India and films like that, some great stuff, and will sort of smile almost, you know, knowingly, like saying, yeah, I know it's going to be on my tombstone that I was in Empire, yeah, but it's an Empire Strikes Back. It's like the least he did. And he didn't. He was on it for 52 weeks, don't get me wrong, but it was like, you know, piling in with all the other lads, you know, it wasn't his best work in his own words, and he would go on to do all these great things. So that, you know, that must be a bit of a double-edged sword for some. But by the same token, and it goes back to what other fandom has got a following like this that does podcasts like this every week, and you know, we'll travel, you know, to the icy wastes of Norway to see where they opened up a Tauntaun. You know, it's all this sort of deep dive in, you know, weird stuff that no other fandom's into it. So it's, yeah, I love it.
Hi, this is Aaron Harris.
And I'm David Monters of the Star Wars Reactions Podcast.
And you are listening to the Rebel Base Card Podcast.
Great poll, kid.
You know, I absolutely love when we get a chance to do these talks, and you've been so kind to come on year after year. I think now this is your fifth time, and you know, it's one of those, I feel bad because now I'm like, as I'm, you know, finishing my coffee, and I know that you're going to need about a gallon of water after this to kind of resuscitate, because you have work to do. You've like, in just looking at the site, and but what I also love on Fantatrax is that, you know, it doesn't have to be 1,000 words. Hey, this is happening here. You know, the Fantatrax website has that great frame where it's like, hey, all I need to do is just put a marker here. And of course, you know, we can always go back and do it later, but here's the news you kind of know, and everything from, you know, new comics to, you know, to what's, you know, here's the latest. They just re-released a bad, you know, the next Bad Batch trailer, yeah, or they did this. So there's these little placeholders, because it is kind of hard to cover it all. But that's what I kind of love about what Fantatrax does, is that there is places for people to go. And even if you visit there, you know, irregularly, you can kind of connect going, oh, okay, boom, 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 boom. And like you said, if we can be interested in a shooting schedule from 45 years ago, it's okay if I catch up, you know, a couple of days or months after it happens, oh, that's a great interview because there has to be a placeholder for it. And it's just a great, it's like going back to your bookshelf and go, oh, okay, I didn't get a chance to read that before. Let me go into that. So that's what I kind of love about what you do, although it seems like such a yeoman's task that I don't know how you do it all.
I don't know how I would do it all. I've got a very understanding wife. I think that's about 90% of it.
Fair enough. So at any rate, I know that pretty soon we're going to be looking forward to seeing a lot more Bad Batch content and all the reviews. And what I love is the platform that you give for a lot of writers, you know, Jen and Daniel and Ross and all those folks that do it, that can kind of contribute, and you can kind of get a great view of a new show. But you get it from all these different perspectives. So it's not just one person telling you, this is how I feel. And so Fantatrax has, although your name's over a lot of it, there's a lot of people that contribute to Fantatrax, and there's so much there that, you know, it's going to do a great job of giving people a great overview, but also allowing to kind of like, there's a lot of different opinions on it, and it's great.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the group reviews. I mean, we're a little bit behind because I've been obviously away for the week, so we're playing catch up a little bit. But I do like the fact that there are, and Greg, I'll say it right here, if you ever want to write any reviews, you are always more than welcome. The differing opinions and the differing perspectives, because it's a bit like the start of our conversation, going back to Fincer, and two different people can see the same thing happen and walk away 45 years later with different recollections. You can watch an episode of The Bad Batch and certain things will pop up to you more than others, because we're all kind of focused on different aspects of Star Wars. So I do like that. And sometimes you'll have one review from one person who's like, that was my favorite episode of Mandalorian. And the next person's like, oh, I didn't like that. So I kind of like that. As long as you can back it up. If you like it, tell us why you liked it. If you don't like it, tell us why you didn't like it. All opinions are valid. No one's got our arms behind our backs telling us we've got to love this stuff, because there's every chance next week it will be a completely polar opposite answer from two different people. So I think that is definitely part of the fun. But I'm always pleased when we do get those group reviews on, because as you say, they are very, you know, different, and you know, you pick up different little elements from different people's words. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's definitely not just me. I know my name's on there a lot, but it's definitely not just me.
Well, and pretty soon, hopefully, I'm assuming you and Mark Mulcaster will get back to doing their reactions chats. Yeah, like I'm adding more work to your plate. Like, would you please do more work so I can ingest it? But what I do love is that in my week to week, as we do, as you know, Greg Cass and I do ours, and then I kind of go immediately after that and start listening to everybody's different takes on it. I love the reactions chats that you and Mark do, and it's kind of fun. It's a fun addition to, you know, FanthaTrax and Making Tracks, because it does give you a chance to kind of like have that water cooler conversation, talk about, hey, what'd you think? Oh yeah, oh that's it, and that's got to be fun, and it is fun for me to listen.
That's very nice of you to say. Reaction chat will be back for The Acolyte. So what we do with the animation stuff is we tend to talk about it in the main show. And we haven't had a chance to do a main show for a couple of weeks, because I would say last weekend I was in Norway, and this weekend Mark's down at Olympia, funny enough, doing London Comic Con Spring. So we probably won't get a chance to talk till Monday. So by then we'll have four episodes of Bad Batch to kind of catch up on. But that'll probably be in the... I think it's coming out Tuesday or Wednesday. I can't remember quite which day we've pitched it this week, but hopefully Tuesday. Depends on if I can get it edited in time. But yeah, we do enjoy talking about it. Because as I say, Mark, being the CEO of the Rebel Legion over here, so he speaks to a lot of people and mixes with a lot of folks, and he's got his own opinions on things as well. But yeah, we're very lucky that we sort of bounce off each other so well. Because when we started Making Tracks, it was Dave Tree, who runs mm-hmm. Farthest From, that you just mentioned, and he moved on to other things, and then Mark came on just initially, just as let's just do one episode and see how it goes. And then we did the one episode, and then we'd finished, I edited it, listened to it all back, and that was pretty good. And then he said, was that okay? And I went, yeah, what are you doing next week? And that was it. We've never stopped. So it's worked out really, really well. And I think we just went over 300 episodes of Making Tracks the other week.
Jeez.
So it's definitely worked out okay. But he's a good lad. So we do have good fun.
See, that's if you go in the dictionary and you look under gravitational pull, I would say FanthaTrax has a great gravitational pull because it pulls in people. But so I'm gonna let you go, because I know you've been going for a long time, and without probably getting a cup of, you know, tea or something like that to kind of like, you know, your throat's probably got to be killing you. But just so people can find you when they can track you down, where can people find you online?
The easiest place is the website, FanthaTrax.com. On socials, I think on pretty much every social, we're at FanthaTrax. So it's fairly straightforward to find us there. And then if you want to hurl abuse at me, and I'm always willing to take it, it's prefect_timing on Instagram and Twitter or X, and Threads as well. So, which I'm trying to use more, because Threads, I quite like the vibe of Threads at the moment. It's quite warm and chatty. I'm sick of going onto Twitter and every tweet is a question of what's your favourite this, pick one of these. It's like, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do surveys. I don't get paid for surveys. So I just want to talk to people. So yeah, that's where you can find me, and Fantha.
Excellent. Mark, this is one of my favourite conversations I love having. I would only love to have more, but I know you've got work to do. But it once again, it's been a pleasure to have you on, and hopefully I will see you in person sooner rather than later.
Let's hope.
Can I offer you a libation to celebrate the closing of our shared narrative?
Hey, folks, this is Ro from the Scarif Scuttlebutt podcast, where you know it's always sunny on Scarif, and you are listening to the Rebel Base Card podcast. Great pull, kid.
Once again, I want to thank Mark Newbold for being on the program. It's a pleasure always to get a chance to talk with him and catch up on all things Star Wars. And if FanthaTrax isn't a part of your nutritious fandom, I think you need to include it in that diet. Lots of good stuff there. Good for you, too. All right, I'm going to let Card Squadron take it out, and we'll talk again soon.
The Rebel Base Card Podcast focuses on cards, collecting, and the Star Wars community, and appreciates you coming along for the ride.
If you have any feedback for this episode, you can reach out to the program in a number of ways. You can leave a comment on the Instagram post for this episode, You can also DM Greg on Instagram at Rebel Base Card.
Make sure to also follow the Rebel Base Card on Twitter and Facebook at Rebel Base Card. If you want, you can send an email to greg@rebelbasecard.com.
And you can find show notes for this and all episodes on the website rebelbasecard.com, in the Star Wars Card Trader app, and just about every other one. You can find Greg at CornFedTech.
The Rebel Base Card uses the hashtag Card Squadron as a way to alert friends about cool cards and recent drops in the galaxy far, far away. It's a great way to bring our community a little bit closer together and help one another finish our sets in time. We collect, communicate, and commiserate. Well, at least when we run out of credits or crystals to spend on our digital collections. Join the fun, even if all the other cool squadron names were already taken. And remember, we collect as one and would be honored if you join us.
And if you are a sketch card artist or Star Wars artist or collector, cosplayer, and want to talk about your work, your craft or passion, drop Greg a line. I'm sure he'd love to hear your story. You can also help the show by leaving a comment or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you got this episode.
Otherwise, the mission is clear. Keep those cards out of the hands of the Empire, and the Rebel Base Card will return soon.
This podcast is not affiliated in any way with Topps, Disney, or Star Wars, nor is it endorsed by Disney or Lucasfilm, and is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. All names and sounds and any other related items are properties of their respective trademarks and or copyright holders here in the U.S. and abroad. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com.
That's it.